Welcome to God Talk. I'm Paul Caffrey, and for the next half hour we'll be talking about things that matter and grappling with some of the big questions of life from a biblical perspective. We're here on 90.3 Near FM, North Dublin Community Radio, broadcasting from our studio here in Northside Civic Centre on this lovely autumn afternoon, and every Monday evening at 5pm, and repeated for those early birds or night owls at 5:30am on Thursdays. Now, as we've said to you before, we would love to hear from you. Our text line is 087-979-5454 at any time during the week or during the programme, the next half hour. Our studio text number is 087-69-44-500. Our Twitter is at NearFMGodTalk. We also have a website at godtalkradioblog.wordpress.com. Someday I'll get that out right. And you can also email us on nearfmgodtalk@gmail.com, or indeed snail mail to the Northside Civic Centre on Bunratty Road here in Coolock. And our podcasts, all 58 of them, are up on the Near FM website. Just go to Listen Again, then General, and then God Talk. So I want to say a big thank you to our backup people here in Near FM, Gary and Paul, who keep us on the straight and narrow and put up our podcasts. Greetings also go out today to Mick O'Brien of Sacred Music, Sunday morning from 9 to 10. Great programme yesterday, Mick. And we'll be interviewing Mick on God Talk in the next few weeks, so that's something to look forward to. Greetings also to a regular listener, Spencer and Caroline, Francis, Ursula, John, Matthew and Lisa. Looking forward to seeing you guys soon. Also to Chris and Susan, to Annette, and a special hello today to Keith and Ruth. I hope you're feeling better, Ruth. Now, you're only hearing one voice so far. Anthony is having a day off. I hope he's listening in, and if so, greetings to himself and Lizanne. Enjoy that mug of coffee. But I'm not alone here in the studio. It's a great pleasure today to have with me an old friend, David Turner. David is director of Church and Shanes, an Irish voice for persecuted Christians. David, thank you so much for coming in.
Great to be here, Paul.
Well, could you tell us a little bit about yourself, David, to start with, so people have some idea who I have in with me today?
Well, I hope people will be happy enough to have a Southsider.
Yeah, I was just going to say, but you're only just a Southsider. You're not too far south, are you?
No, indeed. Originally from Ringsend, which is where you and I got to know each other.
That's right.
30-odd years ago, maybe. I grew up in Ringsend, and for my second-level education, I went to the Ringsend Technical Institute. Perhaps more importantly, a more important building for me was the Ringsend Mission Hall.
I remember it well.
Down on York Road, just beside the East Link Bridge, these days known as the Anchorage. But in days when you and I were involved, there was a children's meeting there on a Tuesday night.
Tuesday evening, yes.
And a youth club on a Saturday evening. And that's where a lot of my faith found expression, in events where we were just seeking to share the good news of Jesus with children and young people. So that's where I started. I worked for most of my career in the post office.
You're not there anymore, are you?
No. I had, some people might say, I had a midlife crisis. I don't really think so.
You're much too young, David, to have had a midlife crisis.
Thank you very much, Paul. I worked in the post office for most of my life, but you've introduced me as the director of Church and Shanes. So I've always, for many years, I've had a concern for Christians who are persecuted for their faith. And I was involved in various things as a volunteer with the Church and Shanes while I worked in the post office. But when I got married and when we were blessed with a child, there was just too much to be done. And a lot of events happened, but it's ended up with me working full-time for Church and Shanes for the last 10 years or so.
Wow, okay. So what is Church and Shanes? Probably many of our listeners have never heard of Church and Shanes.
Okay, well, you very kindly gave out our strapline, which is an Irish voice for persecuted Christians, and I'd like to think that that fairly accurately describes what we do. If people are familiar with the work of Amnesty International, which I think many people are.
Yeah, certainly our listeners would be, many listeners.
Yeah, I think we would often see ourselves as a Christian version of Amnesty International. So in terms, we're the same as Amnesty International in that we have a focus on people who suffer injustice, people who are put in prison. unjustly, prisoners of conscience, but we would have a narrower focus because our particular calling is for those who are put in prison because of their Christian faith. And then another way that we would differ from Amnesty International is that we would encourage people to respond in many ways. And the first way we'd ask people to respond is by praying for those who are in prison. So Amnesty has a different mandate to the mandate that we have in Church in Chains, but there are similarities in a concern for justice around the world.
Okay. Because I think that many of our listeners just might not be aware that Christians are being persecuted in various countries, although in fact they may have seen in the news this week that an American pastor, Andrew Brunson, was released from prison in Turkey, went home to the USA. I was just watching this morning on YouTube an interview that he did in the White House celebrating his return. But that's, I suppose, just one example. But what is the extent of the persecution of Christians around the world, David?
Yes, well, we've just produced a global guide booklet which seeks to answer that question about the extent of Christian persecution. So a lot of research has gone into that booklet, and that booklet contains references to 60 countries around the world where Christians face persecution. So that
60, wow.
Yeah. Mm. So, I mean, that goes from countries, if you're tackling it from a geographical perspective, it goes from countries in the Western Hemisphere. In Latin America, there are Christians who face persecution in the southern part of Mexico. In Cuba, the communist government keeps a tight control on Christianity, and you know, churches have been closed, people have been put in prison. In Colombia, some terrorists are not happy with the existence of Christian churches in territory that they control. So that's Latin America. Then we don't have time, and we're not
I'm just looking at the map because for our listeners, and I'm really recommending that people get a hold of this, and I know that we'll have a chance to give details how they can get it. It's a fabulous publication. Congratulations, David, on a beautiful publication, and I know there's a map that goes with it. But on the inside cover, or on the inside when you open up the centre pages, you have this map, and I'm just amazed at the huge swathe across the map, you know, from America, North Africa, Asia, and so on. And could I ask you, when we say Christians persecuted, is there any particular denominational, is it just Christians, whatever stripe?
It would differ in different countries. So in some countries, it would be Christians of a particular stripe. And very often those who would face the sharpest persecution are those who maybe are on the front lines of mission work, those who those for whom Christianity is not just going to church on a Sunday, but living out a faith day by day and maybe seeking to share their faith with others.
Okay.
So, I don't know, let's take a country like Iran.
Yeah, I was going to ask you for an example. Mm-hmm.
So, if you talk to the Iranian government, as I have on a few occasions, they will tell you that there are Christians that meet in freedom in Iran. And mm-hmm. that's true. Those Christians that meet in freedom are from the Assyrian and Armenian ethnic minority, and they are allowed to meet in open churches and, for the most part, don't have any problems with the Iranian authorities.
So they're kind of a privileged minority in a certain sense.
Exactly. And most people in Iran are Persian, they speak Farsi, and there is no church that is allowed among the Persian Farsi-speaking Christian community.
Okay.
Mm. So it's also an offence to have a Bible. It's also an offence to share your Christian faith with others. And if you're found doing that, you'll be accused of undermining the state. So that's Iran is just one country where some Christians, small minority, don't have any problems, but most Christians, being a Christian means you're going to be persecuted. But you know, Paul, I know you're a Bible student, and mm-hmm. you know your New Testament very well, and you know, anybody listening to us will know, you know, the Jews couldn't cope with the Lord Jesus, and he ended up being persecuted and killed. The apostles, we reckon that 11 out of the 12 apostles were martyred.
That's right, all except John. In fact, we talked about that a couple of weeks ago on the program.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it shouldn't be a surprise that Christians face persecution. Now, we here in Ireland, for the most part, most churches live in complete freedom. Although there was a story in the news just a couple of weeks ago of a church in Donegal that suffered, I think it was probably just random vandalism mm-hmm. rather than religious persecution. But for the most part, we have freedom here in Ireland. And so people kind of think, well, there's probably freedom for every Christian around the world. But I did the sums in relation to the numbers of people who live in the countries where Christians face persecution. And when you total them up, there are over 200 million Christians who live in countries where they would be at risk of persecution. Now, I don't want to say that 200 million Christians are being persecuted every week, but what I am saying is that in the countries in which they live, Christians are facing persecution. So while individuals, it mightn't come to their door this week, it could come to their door next week.
So it's all the time lurking in the background as a real possibility for these people. And is this, would you say persecution is easing worldwide, or is it getting worse? I mean, is this increasing or decreasing, can we say?
Yeah, I think mainly it is increasing. There was a period when it was decreasing. Mm-hmm. There was a period when, you know, there seemed to be a mood towards more tolerance, you know, progression, live and let live. That kind of feeling was pervading quite a bit of the world. But the world has turned has taken a sharp turn in the past few years. And there's a rise in nationalism, and there's a rise too in religious nationalism. So, for example, there would be in India a lot of Hindu nationalists, and their sincere belief is that to be an Indian, you must be a Hindu.
We had something not too different in Ireland once upon a time.
Indeed, indeed. And I mean, that used to upset me somewhat. I mean, sure. I'm of the generation, I was in Stuttgart when Ray Houghton put the ball in the English net. And, you know, I would count myself fully Irish. The fact that I didn't belong to a particular church didn't mean that I wasn't fully Irish. But as I was saying, in India, there are those who believe you must be Hindu. In Sri Lanka, there are those who believe that every citizen must be a Buddhist. There are many countries in North Africa and the Middle East where if you want to be accepted as a citizen of that state, there are those who believe you must be a Muslim. So okay. This is on the rise around the world, and that's how Christians are being persecuted more and more.
And what form typically does persecution take? I mean, we think in terms of imprisonment, execution as an extreme example, but I'm sure there are lots of other forms, perhaps more subtle.
Yes. If persecution is perpetrated by the state, which it would be in countries like Iran and in China, then it results in people being imprisoned, in people facing formal charges, in people being put in labour camps maybe, and in extreme cases, people being executed. The other form of persecution occurs and comes from the society around the Christian community and is maybe not as formalised through the state. So I'd be thinking of somewhere like India that I've mentioned. Outside the towns and cities, many Christian churches are at risk of being persecuted, and they would face attack from these Hindu extremists. Every Sunday without fail in the last 3 or 4 years, some church somewhere in India has been attacked. It usually would be a small church in a village which with maybe 20, 30, 40 members, and a mob of Hindu extremists would just come in. They would wreck the place, they would beat up the pastor, and then often they would try and get the police to charge the pastor with illegal conversion okay. work.
In case anyone has just tuned in, you are listening to God Talk on 90.3 Near FM, North Dublin Community Radio, and this is Paul Caffrey. My guest in studio this week is David Turner, Director of Church in Chains, an independent Irish charity that encourages prayer and action in support of persecuted Christians worldwide. Question I have for you, David, I don't know if there's any particular countries. You touched on India there. Would you care to talk a little bit in detail about one or two countries that you would focus on? You know, I'm thinking of examples that are in your global guide.
Yes. Well, let's talk about India, because we do know quite a bit about that, because in the last few weeks, our annual conference was held here in Dublin, and we had a speaker from India, Shibu Thomas, Director of Persecution Relief. And that organisation exists to support persecuted Christians in India. So he was here to talk about the rise in persecution in India over the last 3 or 4 years. And it coincides with the election of Prime Minister Modi, because Prime Minister Modi was elected with the support of Hindu nationalists, who we touched on earlier. Mm-hmm. And the problem in India, and the problem that we've been seeking to bring to the attention of the Indian ambassador here in Dublin, is that the Indian government is doing little or nothing to stop the types of attacks being perpetrated by Hindu extremists on Christian pastors. So, you know, earlier in the year, we had a postcard campaign in which we encouraged our supporters to send postcards to the Indian ambassador. And the postcards, we looked for images for those postcards, and unfortunately the big problem was to decide which image to pick from a wide range of images of people with broken legs in plaster, images of people whose shirts were bloodied after being beaten, images of pastors with bandages on their head. So that's what's kind of happening in India. And you know, the message on the postcards was, why does India allow persecution of Christians? And that's the question that we are continuing to raise with the Indian ambassador here in Ireland.
And how are you received by, take for example, that particular ambassador, or in general, you've met with other ambassadors? What sort of, are they really surprised that there are people in Ireland who are finding out these things and care enough to protest?
I think generally they are. Ambassadors, sometimes you get a good reception, sometimes you get a very polite reception, sometimes you get a hearing. Often an ambassador will say, I didn't know about this matter and I will look into it. And sadly, my experience has been that we seldom hear back from ambassadors. They don't seem to look into the cases. But in relation to the Indian ambassador, she has ignored letters and phone calls from Church in Chains. That's not too surprising. But what was surprising was that in our campaign on behalf of Indian Christians, we approached the Oireachtas Foreign Affairs Committee. So that's TDs and senators that are mandated to look at foreign affairs issues. And we brought it to their attention, and they considered it important enough to hold a session. And they invited us to come in and give evidence to them about the persecution of Christians in India. And we had a report with documented cases, which we brought in. But they also invited the Indian ambassador to come in to give the Indian mm-hmm. government side of the case. And she declined their invitation.
Okay.
So the committee doesn't have the power to compel the ambassador
sure.
to come in,
mm.
but it did kind of send a message that we don't want to talk about this.
Okay. So that's India. Was there any other country? I think we were chatting earlier on. You said you thought, for example, things were getting bad in China.
Absolutely, yes. China, as many people will know, is a vibrant, progressive society. Particularly its economy has grown in leaps and bounds. I think it's the second largest in the world now. And we're familiar with those stories coming out of China. In the last few years, civic society space has been greatly narrowed in China. China has always sought to control Christianity. So it, in relation to Christianity, back in the 50s, it set up two official churches, one for Catholics and one for all Protestants.
The Three Self, wasn't that
exactly
it?
Yeah. Exactly.
And then there was a kind of an official Catholic Church. I think they've come to some agreement with the Vatican lately.
They have, because I think the Chinese government thought, well, that's fine, we'll have two churches and we'll control them. But most Catholics chose to worship outside the official church, and most Protestants chose likewise. So the Chinese government found they
wasn't
didn't
working.
Have control. So on the Catholic side of the fence, you had bishops that were appointed by the Vatican, but not recognized by the Chinese government. And then you had bishops that were appointed by the Chinese government.
And not recognised by the Vatican.
Exactly. So a deal has been done to try and regularise that situation, but there are some Catholic observers from outside, and indeed non-Catholic observers, that think that a lot of the Catholic parishioners in China have been sold down the river on this deal. Because in the last few years, there's just been increasing pressure on getting all churches to join the official churches. And by pressure, I'm meaning church buildings being destroyed. I'm talking about crosses being removed from church buildings. I'm talking about pastors being removed from pulpits. I'm talking about instructions going out, new set of regulations just introduced earlier this year that are just banning children under the age of 18 from church. Those regulations had been around but had been overlooked for a few years, but they're now being enforced. Also, the Chinese flag is now supposed to be in place in churches, and the Chinese national anthem is supposed to be played at services. So it's the Chinese government isn't making any secret of the fact they have a term they want to Sinicize Christianity. So that's what they're doing, and because there are many, many, like we reckon there's 100 million Christians in China, and probably up to 70 million of those are outside those two official churches. This means this is having a huge impact on Christianity in China.
David, one of the things I like about your quarterly magazine is that you will often feature individual Christians. And I'm wondering, is there any particular, individual cases or people that have really struck you as individuals that have been suffering and suffered a lot for their Christian faith?
Yeah, I suppose there's two people that come to mind at the moment. One is a lady called Asia Bibi, who is from Pakistan, a Catholic woman, an agricultural worker who's been in prison for the last 9.5 years, and she's been under sentence of death for the last 8 years almost. And you might wonder, how would a poor agricultural worker be under sentence of death? And it's because that in Pakistan they have a blasphemy law. And
This is interesting in the light of our coming referendum.
In fact,
I heard a radio discussion last week in which one of the sides was citing Pakistan and Asia Bibi as a particular example of blasphemy law being used against a Christian.
Exactly, yes. And the way that has been misused is that, from what we know, a dispute arose while these workers were working in the field, and it was all to do with bringing water for the midday break. And the report that we got was that some of Asia Bibi's Muslim co-workers said that when Asia drank from the water vessel, that had polluted it for everybody else, because they just felt that Christians and Muslims shouldn't drink from the same vessels. So words were exchanged. Again, from what we know, Asia Bibi, during that conversation, said, Jesus died on the cross for me. What did Muhammad ever do for you? And because of that, she was accused of blaspheming against the Prophet Muhammad. And the penalty under Pakistan's blasphemy law is death. So she was sentenced to death in 2010. And she's been appealing against that sentence, and she's in prison. She's in solitary confinement, heavily guarded prison, because there have been threats to her life. Anybody who has stood up for her has been a great threat. Indeed, a Christian politician in Pakistan who stood up for her was murdered. I remember meeting this man, was called Shahbaz Bhatti. I met him at a conference in London, and within a couple of years, he had been murdered. And going back to Asia Bibi, she's in the news in the past week because her appeal was finally heard after a long period of delay. And three judges of the Supreme Court of Pakistan closely questioned the prosecution evidence, and they seem to be seeing, quite outside observers have known for years, that Asia Bibi is innocent and should be acquitted. But the judges decided to reserve their judgment, so we're waiting for that judgment to come through. But we've been encouraging people to pray for Asia Bibi. We've been encouraging people to write to the Pakistani ambassador. We have been involved with TDs and senators that have signed petitions on her behalf. So Asia Bibi is kind of top of the list of the people that we have been campaigning for as individuals.
Thanks, David. Unfortunately, our old enemy time is against us again, and I know we could talk a lot more about individual people, about countries and so on, and the work of Church and Chains. Could you tell me just what listeners can do if they want to know a little bit more, if they want to get a copy of this really fabulous global guide? And you told me today about you had a request for 300, what did you say, 350 copies?
350 copies from a priest down in the Midlands, and he's planning to use them in his parish and also among transition year students as part of their course. So if anybody wants to find out more, go to our website, churchandchains.ie. You'll see the global guide. You can read it there online. But if you want a copy yourself, just send an email to info@churchandchains.ie and make sure and include your address, and we'd be delighted to send a copy out to you.
David, I'm sorry the time is so short. I thank you so much for coming in. It's been a sobering but extremely interesting programme, and we certainly have a lot to pray for and to pray about. And may God bless you and the work that you're doing in Church and Chains. And to our listeners, I just say good evening. Beg am winn am wicke ar siúl ag an cúpla an ómé, agus the siúl ag an mé sivigéis dach le God talk arís, and teachtan se hugging. We hope to hear you again next week when Anthony will be back with me in the chair. Good evening, everybody, and God bless.